Today is July 11th, 2019. And this is episode number 518 of the Apple Context Machine. It's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of TMO, freshly back from stuffing my face with Philly cheesesteaks and cheese whiz. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, join us over at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you to our Facebook group. Very, very, very handy. And today I am joined by the master of disaster, the minister of the sinister, and the secretary of the reactionary, John Keat.
Hey Brian, how are you doing? Sounds like you're refreshed from your little trip.
Yeah, for sure. It was definitely a nice trip. Very good to see New York City again. Interesting to see Niagara Falls, Philadelphia, you know.
So what was better, the cheesesteak or the Kati rolls I introduced you to?
Oh man, Kati rolls. Oh. Those are so good. Kati rolls. There's a, what's it called? The Kati roll company?
It's the Kati roll company. Yeah. The Kati roll company. There's like three or four of them in Manhattan.
Yeah, that was one of the best recommendations I had. Indian food in a wrap.
Yeah, it's its own little thing. It's hard to explain. It's like what you said, but if you are in Manhattan and you want to check it out, just look for the Kati roll company. The one on 39th Street right next to Bryant Park is the one that I go to frequently, and you could take them to go and just enjoy the nice atmosphere in Bryant Park. But get the number 7 and the number 11. Those are I've tested many, and those are my highlights.
Chicken and lamb.
Yes.
Chicken and lamb. Yeah, very, very, very tasty. That was one of the best recommendations I had. Anyway, yeah, good trip. Good to be back for sure. Also good this week. Molecule is sponsoring this episode, which I'm super excited about. I love Molecule. I'm going to tell you all about them later in the show, but before we do that, we are going to take a long extended trip into the world of, what do I hear? Here's my notes. I don't know exactly how this is going to go, John, but this is what I have for my notes for us for topic number one. Topic number one is Apple, Johnny Ive, Tim Cook, Services, Macs, Performance, MacBooks, MacBook Air, Processors.
So did you just take a word cloud off like Google Analytics to see what was trending today?
just
word cloud just vomit.
Yeah, might as well. So yeah, really, I have no idea how this conversation is going to go, but I figure you're the person to have it with.
Sure.
We had dinner, by the way, you and I.
Yes, it was very nice. I enjoyed the company.
I enjoyed the food very, very much, and it was fantastic to see you again. I haven't seen you in physically seen you in 3 years?
Yeah, I think it's 4 years.
No. Is it really?
Yeah, I think it was 2015 when I did my little trip around the country.
How long have we known each other? This is like that I don't 2003, remember. Oh, 4?
No, the first article that I submitted to you guys was 2001.
Oh, wow.
It published a few days after 9/11, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Maybe an ominous sign.
Well,
in retrospect,
at least it didn't presage 9/11. That would be an ominous sir sign. Anyway, yeah, we've known each other for a long time, and it was really good to see you again. I appreciate you doing the show with me today. So let's just dive right into it. While I was traveling, and specifically the day that I went officially on vacation, Johnny Ive resigned from Apple.
Yeah, on a personal level, I very much sympathize with you. It's happened to me a couple of times where every time I go away, like some disaster happens or a big bit of work in this case for you to opinionate over. Yeah, so what are your opinions on his leaving? I'm actually very curious.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, it's. I have a whole lot of thoughts. I mean, like one. I don't even know where to start. And maybe that's just it. I don't know whether the cart is pulling the horse or the horse is pulling the cart here. Did Johnny leave because design is a problem, or was design a problem because Johnny hadn't left?
So,
and we don't know, but we do have that story out of, was it the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times?
Yeah, I think it was a garbage story out of the Wall Street Journal.
Wall Street Journal.
Really a disgustingly self-contradictory pile of clickbait.
But there were some interesting aspects of that. Like, for instance, the notion that Johnny was frustrated that the company was less design-oriented than it was under Steve Jobs. That under Tim Cook, it's less design-oriented and was more operations-oriented, more and is becoming more services-oriented, and that was somehow frustrating Johnny Ive. Did you take exception to that particular portion of that article?
Well, uncharacteristically for you, you're not being pedantic enough in that characterization, because I think what the statements were that Johnny Ive was very upset that the board was being constituted by people that weren't design oriented, which just is idiotic because it fundamentally misunderstands what the board is about. If you recall,
well, I agree with that. I do agree with that.
Steve Jobs had a cutout, cardboard cutout version of Ellison from Oracle that he would put in board meetings because obviously Ellison was just going to say yes to whatever Steve wanted, right? So, and they do governance stuff that has nothing to do with design. The board doesn't care, or even if they care, they don't have any prominence
over that. They're not involved. They're not involved in design.
So that's just silly, and it just there are other contradictions there that somehow Johnny was holding on to the reins too hard, and yet he wasn't around. So I'm like, well, you can't have it both ways, right? Like, if he's basically just sitting in a meeting and saying, okay, whatever you guys said sounds good to me, doesn't sound like a guy that's holding on to the reins.
But that's not what
that
article said. What the article said was that,
well, those were two statements.
He was sitting around, and then he wouldn't say, whatever you want to do is okay, or whatever you want to do is not okay. That was what they were describing, is that he was holding on to the decision-making power without actually making decisions.
That's somewhat incorrect, because what the other things in that article said was that we didn't need Johnny's approval for this. We could go over with what we had, but we desperately wanted his approval, right? So again, it doesn't sound like someone's controlling it if they didn't need his approval. They could just do what they want. So there's too many contradictions into that article to be anything but clickbait. I don't dispute that a lot of the factoids were correct. I dispute the toxic narrative that they were trying to make just to get clicks. Was a real overarching narrative there.
Right. And I doubt it was just to get clicks, but I can't prove that one way or the other, so let's not go down that particular rabbit hole. Oftentimes an article can be written in good faith and still be wrong.
I don't think this article is written in good faith, but different fair-minded folks can disagree.
All right, fair enough. The other aspect about that article and about Johnny Ive leaving is the very things that we have been complaining about Apple, you and I specifically, for a long time, and that is that design does seem to be taking a backseat to things. And that does dovetail precisely with what the article was saying. Now, whether or not that was frustrating Johnny Ive, I guess one can argue about, but there is a lot of dovetailing there.
So I think that's also part of what you say has some weight to it, but part of it is again, self-contradictory. Part of the criticism also fairly levied against them is the design has too much power, because things are at this point stupidly thin, right? No one's asking for the iPhone to be any thinner. We'd like more battery life.
And I always blame that on Johnny.
Yeah, we don't need a butterfly keyboard. The last keyboard was fine. We didn't need that extra half millimeter of space. I'd rather have that for a better keyboard. And you know what? Spare two more millimeters and give me more battery life. So in a lot of ways, design is ruling the roost is one criticism. And then, they don't care about design enough. You can't have it both ways.
You can't have it both in ways. But what we haven't been getting is new products.
But that's a different issue, and I believe that's an operational issue. I'm not sure that's a design issue, meaning that the design group can be putting out lots and lots of designs, and Johnny was putting out, before Steve Jobs came back, putting out lots and lots of designs. The problem was that Apple wasn't making, you know, wasn't acting on them to make good designs, and that, I think that's what gets to your point where saying is maybe not enough of the good designs were getting out, and he was frustrated by that. That's possible, I guess, but I'm not sure that's what, in my opinion, that's not why Johnny left. But it's a fair narrative to pursue.
I've got a very different spin on the exact same story. Ready?
Go ahead.
Okay. So,
yep.
What if the real issue with Johnny and Sir Johnny even and Tim Cook and Apple and design and operations and services and money and revenues. What if the real issue is that Johnny Ive was frustrated because he wasn't getting the same kind of attention from the CEO that he was used to enjoying when Steve was CEO?
I guess it's possible, and that is one of the things in the article that I don't take issue with. It's a factoid that seems reasonable. You know, I think that Steve Jobs, it was in his blood. He eagerly wanted to go to the design lab every day and play with the new toys that were created, right? And I can find very believable that Tim Cook doesn't go every day, and he might go only once a month, and is not nearly as interested with that, and he's fine with delegating that to Johnny and others.
Yeah. So then to spin that yet again, what if it's less about Tim not caring about design and more simply a reflection of the fact that Tim actually trusts the design group with the design and is not mucking about with those day-to-day decisions?
I think that's accurate, and I think it's also in this. You know, I'm not one to skip on a chance to criticize Tim Cook, but this is an area where I won't criticize him. When a person is out of their depth and it's not in their wheelhouse, why would he, you know, mess with this? If your idea of good design is you know, a ransom note using 38 fonts for your homework report, maybe you shouldn't be, you know, designing the web pages for the company and whatnot. And I'm sure that Tim has a better aesthetic than I'm making out, but it's a totally natural thing for him to stay out of. And I don't find there are a lot of things that I find interesting about the personality type of Johnny Ive. I find him to be innocent, bordering on naive in some areas, kind of personality-like. At least that's the way it comes off. I know nothing, by the way, I've never met him. So, you know, he could be the most devious, sinister human being ever known to man and completely different than my impressions. But my impressions are there's a certain amount of naivete and innocence in the best of ways about his personality and his thoughts on how companies work and design that Steve Jobs created a bubble for him to work in where he could really flourish. And that is a bubble that no other human being will ever be able to make for Johnny. And as much as I find him innocent and naive in some ways, I don't think he's so so off intellectually that he can't understand that will never happen again. Right. There's no reason to expect Tim Cook would have a design ability or anywhere near what he had with Steve, and that would somehow at some point get to him that would be the cause of his leaving. I think, again, there's a very different reason for his leaving, and it wasn't that I don't have what I had with Steve. I think that was made self. It was completely readily apparent after Steve died that wasn't going to happen. I don't think he would have expected for some kind of surrogate to come in the way of Tim Cook there. So I don't think that's a disappointment or a surprise to him.
Well, and also I can only imagine that, you know, we talk about it, that safe bubble that Steve Jobs created, and I completely agree with that. At the same time, Steve would come in and push back. and demand more and say, this is great, but this little tiny aspect of it is, you know, poop.
I don't remember if it was you or if it was Dave Hamilton, but it was such a good analogy. I think with, or maybe it was elsewhere, but there's a bit of Lennon and McCartney with Jobs and Ives, right? The two made each other way better than they were individually, even though they were quite incredible individually. And I think there's something to that. And to expect another Lennon and McCartney kind of vibe to grow from anyone with Ive is going to be very different. And maybe the only way he gets that is to run away, start a new business where he could find another collaborator of some sort like that, that he could work with in a new venue. I think the structure of Apple is such that I can't see that thing happening. It was too organic. It was forged when the company was near bankruptcy. Two guys, you know, working their tails off to save the company, and that kind of relationship is just very difficult to duplicate. You see it in all kinds of areas. Like one of the shows I used to love is Top Gear with the original crew with Jeremy Clarkson and whatnot. And it's very difficult to forge the chemistry that those fellows had with replacements. It's something that's very organic, and when it happens, it happens. But I don't think it's something you could repeat structurally.
No, I agree with that. And on a completely tangential note, Apple used to outsource a lot of its design, even under Steve.
Sure, the famous frog design, right?
Frog design, yeah. Yeah, and frog design is still an ongoing concern, but this would not be the first time that Apple worked with outside designers. At the same time, I don't expect Apple's design group to go anywhere.
I think that the design group is very fine, and I think Johnny is probably should have every right. I'm assuming this is proud of what they developed, and I'm sure they're going to continue to do a good job. From the rumor mill, what I see, and I don't see why this isn't true, because you've seen little products that Johnny has seemingly enjoyed putting out that are not related to technology. You know, Johnny might want to make a refrigerator. He might want to make a table. He might want to make.
He's made cameras recently, right? In the last few years, and done several things with the product Red.
And jewelry and things that are unlikely to take for Apple to pursue. And I think that this allows him to go and pursue those interests in a way that he just couldn't at Apple. You wonder about the non-compete, because I think Samsung and Microsoft probably Google are willing to pay a fortune for Johnny to design a phone, and they're going to slap "Designed by Johnny Ive" all over it, right? If they could get him to design a phone for them. So you wonder would he do it? Is there a non-compete to prevent him from doing it? And
would
even
he
if there isn't,
to?
Would he exactly, would he want to? I mean, the weirdness with him is that he has probably a gross amount of money from all his Apple stock. So I doubt you can, it seems difficult unless he has some kind of gambling problem we don't know about for him to be.
Yeah, I don't think he'd do it for the money, because he doesn't need the money. He would do it if he wanted to do it or not.
And this gets me a little bit to where I think the real reason that he left was he was just burned the heck out. This guy, after, you know, in 2011, when Steve died, a lot of weight was left on his shoulders to keep Apple at the forefront in design and seeming innovative and all these things. And I think this guy had an enormous rope, and he was tugging a battleship behind him. And you could just see physically, in my opinion, he was degenerating. You know, it's not just that he got fat. He looked tired. He looked burnt out. I've seen, unfortunately, I'm way too familiar with burnout in different career paths, so it just looked that way. And by the time he got to 2015, and I guess that's when they finish the the campus.
Like last year?
Apple Park, wasn't it? It was like last year, and I guess they started it. When did they? I guess they. Well,
2015
anyway.
is when they were getting to the, you know, not just machines carving holes in the ground stage.
Yeah, I think you got to the point where, look, this is my last hurrah. I'm doing this for Steve, and kind of I think I've done all I physically could to get everybody on the right path. And at a certain point, I've done what I could. I set up the design lab to hopefully be, you know, self-sustaining and in good shape. I finished Steve's last, you know, dream of the campus. And now I just got to go. I'm too burnt out. I got other things to do. And that's why he probably wasn't very active in the company even the last bunch of years, because you're just dealing with someone that had too much weight to pull and was burned out. I've said that way before this occurred. If you recall years ago, even on our Pop.0, I said, this is a guy that looks exhausted and burned out. Yeah. So that's my theory. It was just burnout, and it's as simple as that.
All right, so here's another line of thought, and I have no evidence or information to guide this, but it's an interesting thought. So first of all, it was Apple that made this announcement, right? And that was for the stock market.
Sure.
Right? So Apple made sure to control the narrative, and of course they could only do that with Johnny's cooperation, because Johnny obviously could walk out the door and announce whatever he wants to announce. He didn't. He let Apple make the announcement. Apple actually made the announcement that this employee is going to go make a separate company, but he's still going to contract out, or we're still going to contract out to him, and he's going to accept us as a client, right? So that was all Apple controlling the narrative. What I would like to know is whether or not the entire thing was put together in cooperation with Tim Cook. Like if Johnny and Tim Cook worked out the path that Johnny was going to take, or whether or not Johnny worked out his path and then he let Tim know, and then he let Apple actually still control the narrative. Do you see what I'm saying?
No, that's a good question. I don't know where the tail and the mouth begin and end in that circle. I don't see it. I mean, being negative with Johnny would be counterproductive from a PR standpoint of, you know, amazing proportions, right? So in some way, almost anything he wanted to do within reason was going to be approved, because, you know, what are they going to say? Oh, you're not going to let me, you know, do my design work. You're going to enforce some kind of weird non-compete, which is unenforceable in California anyway. So it would behoove Apple to be as friendly as possible to whatever it is that, that he actually wanted.
There's being friendly to what's possible, and there's actually like working, like Johnny actually working hand in hand with Tim Cook to come up with a plan that met both Johnny's goals and presented Apple in the best positive light.
I think, anyway, my guess is that it was Johnny's plan, and the only thing that Tim probably, he has quite honestly a fiduciary duty to make sure is to say, look, please don't go to our competitors and become a designer for them, right? Well, can we structure this in some way that if you have an urge to make a phone, that we get the right of first refusal, shall we say, right? Or something like that. So who knows what those details are, but it's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I would like to know. I'd like to have been a fly on that wall.
It's funny. I'm so much less interested in this topic because I guess I'm self-satisfied that in my mind, it's just burnout, I'm not as, I guess, curious about the workings of it as I am many other things at Apple that flummox me. I guess the only thing left of some concern for me is, how well will design continue to rule the roost at Apple when it's moved on? It's not no longer directly going to report to Tim, does it somehow get deprecated? Because right now all engineering basically knows that design rules the roost. Will that somehow change over time?
Yeah, that is a good point, because design under Johnny Ive had a level of power that it will not have without Johnny Ive. design will not have the same cachet within the company of Apple Incorporated that it had with Johnny. It simply will not. Things will be different. It's like when Tim Cook said that like nothing's going to change about Apple, right after Steve died, right? Yeah. That's actually, it's just not possible because you have different people making different decisions, and those different people have different interests and you know aesthetics and values and you know and goals and you know on and on and on. So, however good whomever is taking over design is within Apple, however good they are or are not, they will not have the same level of power and authority that Johnny Ive had. And what will that do?
Yeah. On the other hand, we kind of know what that will do, because if the reports are correct in that he's basically been absent from product design for the last 4 years anyway. So we kind of see, right? We're probably enjoying the fruits of others' designs and say so's. If Johnny was truly as disinterested as is made out in that article that he was just absent, it means other people have been making those decisions for quite a while.
Yeah, but at best or worst, depending on how you want to define it, it would have been people trying to pursue what they thought Johnny wanted. Even that will change.
Yes, I think so. It might be very interesting. I wonder how much input Johnny had into the new Mac Pro. Because one of the nice things about the new Mac Pro is that it generally was not a design that was form over function. It seemed to be very functionally driven with the form, following.
As opposed to the trash can, which was clearly driven by form.
Correct. And many of the other designs, one would argue as well, like the keyboard that not everybody likes. I don't know. I'm somehow I'm very comfortable in saying, look, if you're a designer, either you want to work for Ferrari or something, if you're in car design or something like that, but the Ferrari of the tech world is clearly Apple. You want to go there. If I were a designer, that's clearly where I would want to go. It's going to be a crucible of major proportions, and I don't see that changing. I think that there's going to be very healthy, good design inside of Apple. They know, regardless of the reporting issues, I think it's baked into Apple, at least to some degree, that design is a very important element of their products, and it's hard to imagine them losing sight of that, but I guess crazier things have happened too. But I'm relatively comfortable, and that's going to be in good stead.
Well, all right, we'll check this out. Do you remember when a certain fellow named Steve Jobs left a little company he had formed with a buddy of his called Apple? Mm-hmm. And he goes to the board and says, "Fine, I'm out. And if you don't mind, I'm going to take just a couple of people with me." I'm just gonna take a handful of people with me, and then he basically takes like some of Apple's top engineers and designers too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And he makes Next, and it was correct. A big deal, and like Apple actually even thought about suing.
Yeah, I think there were suits. There were lawsuits involved in there and settlements.
I can't remember the specifics of that, but the point is that Steve said he did tell the board he was just going to take a couple people. Then ended up taking a bunch of people, and it was like many of the top people, at least obviously from Steve's point of view. So at the same time, Apple's design team under Johnny Ive has been remarkably stable for 20 years. More than 20 years, 25
more.
Years.
Yeah, more.
25 years,
yeah.
I think it is. It's like, you know, and they've been, there's all these stories about how it was a very insular team and how, you know, like they would party together, they would dine together, they would socialize together, they would hang out. Like, you know, these were like close people. So how many of Apple's top designers is Johnny going to take to his new company? Or does he actually maybe he wants a change. Maybe he won't take any of the top designers. But I bet some people will go with him.
I would not be surprised if a few people went there. I don't know if it's going to be a huge number, just because it seems like a few people have left, and there's like a new group there, like a new generation that really don't know Johnny personally as well. Of course, I'm sure if Johnny offered, people would probably be very tempted to go.
Does he have a contract that prevents that?
It's very common, and I'm sure it's very common, but it's also very fuzzy, meaning, Steve also had a contract when he left, and he didn't necessarily abide by it, right?
So he did ask for permission.
Kind of, but yeah, I mean, it's kind of like when Steve decided to call it the iPhone and didn't clear the trademark with Cisco, right? He's like, whatever, I'm just going to make this work later. There is a bit of that, just as a function of business. It's a little bit fuzzy and messy at times. But I don't know how big a crew he's looking to bring.
Right. Just be him and his buddy Mark.
Yeah, I could see just a few people maybe going, and the design group would totally survive with a few people taking it. And I don't think they're going to compete with Apple, meaning like they're clearly purely design. It's not like they're saying what's the next, laptop or phone that they want to make on their own. They want to be, I think, basically akin to Frog Design, but just in a broader palette of potential products, not just for computers and tech, but, for refrigerators and toasters and who knows what else.
What's Mark's last name? Do you remember? The guy I'm talking about?
I know the guy you're talking about that he brought in for the watch project, basically.
Yeah. And maybe for the car.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Johnny Ive, friend Mark. Mark with a C. Mark Newson. It's Mark Newson.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I would assume, but do not know, that Mark Newson is going to be involved in Johnny's new company. I would also imagine that the press will be paying, the mainstream press will be paying very close attention to Johnny's new company and will be reporting on hires and reporting on steals and poaching, and will be reporting on deals.
And I'm super excited because I'm also, although I have obvious interests in kind of tech and the Apple world, I think it's exciting that he's going to design other stuff. I'm very curious to see what he'll do. What's a Johnny piano look like? What's a Johnny desk look like?
God, it's so funny you say that.
Plant Potter look like.
Just pulled up a story from 2013. Johnny Ive and Mark Newson's 1.5-ton desk.
Yeah.
Have you seen this? I'll include a link in the show notes. Here, let me shoot this to you right now. Look at that desk. That's a good looking desk. I would own that desk. I mean, I couldn't afford that desk. I don't even know how much it is, but I would own that desk.
I'm very jaded against desks. I've designed my own, and I think mine is frankly much better.
Look at this one.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's very simple.
It's very simple. I like it quite a bit.
As long as you don't put anything on it, it's going to remain very elegant.
Well, that's the case with everything Johnny designs, right?
Well, not with my desk, but anyway, I'll just, anyway, it's lovely. Like I said, that is a cool desk, and I'm sure that there'll be many other cool things that he'll make.
I could see them, Mark Newson has designed a bunch of furniture. I've always felt that Johnny Ive was interested in doing that sort of thing. As you mentioned, jewelry, other kinds of products. I imagine that we'll end up seeing quite a bit of really, really interesting stuff. And, it's maybe at Apple's loss, but as potential gains for us, although, between the two of us, maybe only you could afford it.
Who knows? I think as a designer, most people are excited about making something that many people can, enjoy. And I think that was very powerful. So we'll see. Happy trails to Johnny Ive. Yeah, I hope he gets the rest and joy he has well earned from this next chapter of his life.
Yeah, and I wonder if he'll move back to England too. All right, we don't know. We'll find out. So before we move on to the next half of topic one, let me take a second out to tell you all about Molecule. Molecule, that's Molecule with a K, MOLEKULE.com. This is an air purifier. I love this air purifier. Heading into fire season, longtime listeners will remember that I bought my first molecule because I was worried about fires in Silicon Valley, actually fires in Northern California, where the smoke comes through and the air quality goes to heck. It's exactly what happened last summer. I was so excited I had my molecules, and we're heading into that season again, and I hope that we don't have those fires, but if they do, I am at least prepared in my house. I love this air purifier, and really, regardless of the fire, chance of fire and smoke and air quality and whatnot outside. So Molecule has introduced a breakthrough science that is finally capable of destroying air pollutants at a molecular level. Molecule's PECO technology, it's P-E-C-O, goes beyond HEPA filtration to not just capture but completely destroy the full spectrum of indoor air pollutants, including those 1,000 times smaller than a HEPA filter can trap. Now, that's really, really cool. According to the company, one of their customers even said that she was able to breathe through her nose for the first time in 15 years. And I've been using mine for a year now. I love them. I absolutely love them. In silent mode, you can't hear them. If you have an odor, or like I just recently left my house for 2 weeks, and when I came back, I cranked them up, and my house was beautiful smelling once again. I just can't say enough about this particular product. I'm so excited that they're sponsoring me, because you were listening to this show, the Apple Context Machine, you can get $75 off of your first order at molecule.com. Again, that's molekule.com. You'll get $75 off your first order if you enter ACM at checkout. Right? This is good stuff. You should absolutely check them out. If you're in the market for a quality air filter, you need to check out molecule.com, molekule.com. Enter ACM at checkout and you'll get $75 off your first order. Okay, great. Let's see here. My notes for topic one, Apple, Johnny Ive, Tim Cook. Services. I kind of want to talk about services a little bit, John.
Sure.
And here's what I want to talk about on services. So I looked at Tim Cook's sudden talking about services. You know, we're going to double services revenue, services, services, services. This has been going on for the last 18 months to 2 years. And I looked at that as a essentially as a sort of like changing the subject because they knew that iPhone sales had largely plateaued and that really that it was sort of a distraction kind of thing. It was sort of a, you know, maybe even a temporary shift. It didn't represent a shift in focus within the company. It was simply a shift in what Apple was pointing to. But now it's
PR.
Yeah,
PR, saying focus on this, even though we're going to continue to do what we've been doing.
Yeah. And now I'm not so sure.
Maybe. I wish they would. You know, Apple has very few services that aren't tied to their hardware. So, as a genuine services company, they are pretty stinky. You know, iCloud.
I want all their services dependent upon it.
I hear you. But I think that there are some awesome services Apple could do that are self-sustaining. And one of their self-sustaining services is Apple Music. You don't need a Mac. You can just get that, and you can use it on many different devices. And lots of Apple, you know, TVs will now support it. Lots of speakers will support it. Android support. There's an Android app to let you use it. So one with regard to privacy, that I think it's one of the few companies that I actually trust with regard to privacy. What if Apple made a VPN service? I don't trust most of the VPN services. Like, some of them are operated out of Costa Rica. Yeah, you know, no bad things could possibly happen to a company operating Costa Rica, right? And those might be some of your best choices on a VPN. So people are very worried when you use a VPN that, oh my gosh, you know, a good use for it is when you're out using public Wi-Fi. This will tunnel back to a company, and so your traffic can't be, you know, sucked out of the Starbucks guy that's sitting there and sharking all over your data that you're transferring. But and some people will say, well, I don't want my ISP to see all my clicks and what I'm doing. But when you get a VPN, you're just pushing that out to another company that can still see all your clicks and know what you're doing. Apple could totally take over this. I would believe Apple when they say we don't keep any logs, or we use differential privacy, so it's impossible to, you know what you're doing, and offer something like that. But, you know, outside, but they don't. And that would be also something they could tie to a router if they still made one, where you just put in your Apple ID, and no matter where you go, you just automatically get VPN service anywhere in the world from your local router. They could have done something like that too. So there are things they can do, but outside of Apple Music, I don't know any services they have that are not tied to hardware. So I'm wondering why you feel like all of a sudden it's not just mere market puffery that they're pointing to, that it's somehow becoming more real.
Well, where I worry is, and there are conflicting markers for this. For one thing, we do finally have updated, the only Mac that hasn't been updated recently is the iMac Pro. Right? But that is a relatively recent thing. That's one of the things that we were going to talk about during later in the segment is this notion of when do we have a trend, right? You and I talked about that a long time ago. Like, when do we have a trend? When do we have a trend, and when do we have anecdotal evidence that doesn't support a trend in terms of Apple regularly updating its Macs? Well, we just got a 9-month, 8-month update to MacBook Airs and the entry-level MacBook Pro?
So I don't think we have a trend for MacBook Airs, because this would only be the second update that was in a reasonable update. I think we've always had a trend of MacBook Pros being generally updated yearly,
There was actually a fairly long stretch. It was like an 18-month stretch at one point.
There was, but since then it's been 2016, 17, 18, 19, right? Yeah. So I'd say for that, you know, reasonable people will differ, but after 4 years, I'm like, okay, that seems to be back on track.
No trend there yet.
iMac Pro still not out. iMac
has been
pretty decent, I guess, generally. Some spurts.
It went almost 2 years before that last update, because I was cranky about the iMac.
I agree with you. It went a little too long, and
so we don't have a trend with the iMac. We don't have a trend with the Mac Mini. We certainly don't have a trend with the Mac Pro.
Correct. iMac Pro as well.
iMac Pro. As a matter of fact, the trend that is showing with the iMac Pro is a terrible one, because the trend so far is that it's going to go more than 2 years. It already has gone more than 2 years since it was announced.
The MacBook was just killed off, although that's been killed off more than once and brought back to life. So who knows if it doesn't come back in another form.
I'm okay with that one being killed off.
Yeah. I think they named that incorrectly. That should have the MacBook Air, the current one, is really the entry level machine, and it should have just been called the MacBook, and they should just rename it to the MacBook. And what was the MacBook, the 12-inch one, was more of a MacBook edition, or maybe you could have even called that the MacBook Air because it was so tiny and light. It was just so wrongly named. It's not the end of the world that they misnamed these things, but you know. you would hope that they, for a company where marketing is kind of important, they seem to fumble quite a bit on kind of the basic positioning of products more often than they should. But anyway, I digress. So yeah, I think the only thing that we can say that there's a trend with is the MacBook Pro, and everything else has been spotty. Hopefully improving, not quite.
Hopefully improving. We do have a trend of stuff improving. We just can't say whether or not that trend is indicative of the future, is sustainable and sustained. Yeah. So with that in mind, That would have been one of the things that worries me about services. Like, does Apple just basically think it can grow services enough that it can continue to have this very lackadaisical approach to releasing new products and to killing products off, for instance, killing off the
display? Are you kidding me? Are you actually postulating that as a serious point of question? Of course they don't care. Hey, how's your back to your Mac working? How's that working out for you today?
It's not.
Oh, that's right, because they just randomly killed things and features. Like, they randomly killed the MacBook the other day. Certainly a service being killed at random at any given time is not a problem, which is, you know, one of the long-suffering issues with Apple and Enterprise is that anything coming from the mothership itself is totally untrustable and unreliable in any long-term stretch. And by long-term, I mean even for 5 years in a row.
Yeah, these are true things, but at the same time, we do have finally the new Mac Pro, being announced, and the Mac Pro Display. What's it called? Pro Display DXR,
XDR, or something
like that, right?
So with camera and no speakers.
Yeah. That display doesn't need a camera.
People still need FaceTime.
People don't need to be doing FaceTime while they're
at their mixing. Mega super powerful computer. The one thing I can't do is a basic FaceTime call. Great.
Yeah. All right. I see your point. I would imagine that the target market for that specific display couldn't care less about having a camera in it.
All right, man.
But what I want to see is I do want to see the Pro Display. The Pro Display that does have the camera built into it, Pro Display.
Hey, you don't hear my the soundtrack I got going on. I'm playing a little Nirvana. Well, all apologies. It's a great song. It's a great song. I thought you'd be familiar with it. I also agree with you that yes, they should. Someone put out a great article. I forget who it was, but they're like, you know what? Just give us the iMac, the current 5K iMac. Literally put nothing in it except the screen and sell it to us for the same price as the iMac. We will take it at this point. And everyone is such a battered Apple user, right? That even for like $1,300, whatever the lowest cost 5K, you know, entry, just gut it of the computer part. Give that to us as a screen at this point, for crying out loud, and just give us a normal Apple branded screen. I mean, don't get me wrong, that XDR monitor is lovely for $7,000. It's for what it does, it's fantastic. But there needs to be a little bit more entry level pro model, because people that do sound engineering don't need their sound engineering waveforms to be color matched.
That's right. That is true. No, I agree. I do completely agree with that.
So there are many pros that need a screen. They don't need one that is reference quality. They just need a decent one. And a 4K or a 5K display with an Apple logo on it, it should not be something that we are still begging for. I'm hopeful that maybe that, you know, within the year or so, they'll come out with one. Yeah. But there's been zero rumor about it. So I'm not terrible. I know that I'm being hopeful against reason.
All right. You know, regardless of whether or not we're seeing trends in the Mac, and regardless of whether or not Apple is introducing enough new products, and, you know, regardless of those things, I remain hopeful that this emphasis on services is for Wall Street and doesn't truly reflect a shift in focus within the company. I hope so, that's the case. I
think what would be one of your fears? Because I'm not getting a good feel for what your fears are, because it seems like the company, like I said, has been doing basically the same thing it's always been doing, other than saying, hey, check this line of revenue, which is really all iPhone based. And Wall Street isn't buying it, by the way, for a second. Like Apple's PE multiple hasn't changed in forever. It's absurdly low at 16, and it's been that way for forever. So what's your fear? I guess what kind of service will they do that you'd be like bummed out?
Well, it's not a service that would bum me out. It's whether or not we're going to go back to just no new products.
Oh yeah.
That's my fear is a shift away from the importance of hardware/software. Right. And I think it is entirely legitimate for Apple to tout its services growth, because Apple's services industry would be, I don't know, what, like a Fortune 100 company? Mm-hmm. Elsewhere, you know, they're doing more than $30 billion a year right now in services, or close to it at least. And I mean, that's a huge business. And I mean, it's not that I don't want Apple to emphasize that, and it's certainly not that I don't want Apple to continue to introduce new services. I just want to make sure that Apple, the best hardware/software company on the planet, continues to release new hardware/software.
Yeah, I got to say, their software has been very lame to this point. And they're still so while hardware, you know, knock wood, hopefully is on the mend, I haven't seen indication on the software side. The OSs are great, but the iWorks, everyone released a press release, I don't know if it was a month ago or so. Oh my goodness, a major update to iWorks. And it so was not. All they did was basically roll in new library features that are in the OS into the product. That product is over 10 years old now. It still does not let a person in Pages do a table of authorities or to change the paragraph numbers to custom numbers. You know, this is stuff that was in word processors in the 80s. So, and I get, you know, when Pages came out and it was brand new 1.0, I get it. It's been over 10 years. There's no excuses anymore for this. It's clearly those products, in my opinion, are barely kept on life support. They're very stagnant. Even look at Keynote. There's so many cool new innovations and presentations that are out there, the kind of infinite whiteboard stuff. And here's a product that would be great. I'm going to be forced to buy a Surface Hub to do kind of whiteboard work, because the Google product of their digital whiteboard is a service, and it's absurdly priced. And also, I hate Google. So, and I'm not terribly fond. It's lesser evil, so to speak. At least it's not totally service based. But Apple could do something amazing there. Even though the Microsoft product has the concept of an infinite whiteboard where you draw on stuff like that to do presentations and all kinds of fancy things. Apple could do something like that. I'm sure lots of people at Apple do presentations all the time internally. Why not crank that up to something that isn't basically what Keynote was roughly, I don't know, 10 years ago? With right. Very minor changes.
Well, and Keynote came about in the very first place because Steve Jobs didn't think that that PowerPoint was any good, which it was not.
Right. It actually came. The motivation for it was a really wonderful program called Concurrence under Next Step, and it's very clear what kind of the design roots of Keynote were straight from that. So, and it, when I. It hasn't evolved far, is my point. There are many new ways of doing presentations, one of which is also a service out there. I forget the name of the company, but it lets you infinitely zoom in to any part of the image and zoom out over and over, and that becomes a kind of slide change in perspective, right? You could zoom in on what looks like a period at a sentence, and there'll be a, you know, an image of a campus there or something like that, and out. That's just one of many different kind of new trends in whiteboard and in presentations, and there's been nothing other than, again, rolling in new operating system library things into the products themselves, and they consider those major updates, which is a joke. The products are stagnant in every design and feature sense. So I haven't seen any indication that the software side, outside, again, the operating systems, they've done a good job of relatively speaking, iterating those. But outside of that, I don't see any lust for it. And the story, again, it's apocryphal, but the story that, hey, the team that made Aperture, major members of it went away, which happens. They went to different companies, and it was kind of left with only a few developers on there. And Apple went to its developers internally and said, hey, would you mind coming off of your project and working on Aperture? And everyone, no one raised their hand, so they said, well, we'll just kill the product. Again, that would never happen with Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs wouldn't say, would you mind? Say, how about this? You're going to do what I told you, or I'm going to fire all of you, and I'll find someone that will. It's insane that people get I don't feel like working on that. Really? Well, maybe you shouldn't work here if you don't feel like working on that, because that's what we need you to work on. So it seems like there's no lust at Apple to like make the next app. And I wonder if that hasn't contributed to just the general horrible quality of software. There aren't too many awesome apps left anymore, like the gems. There were so many more gems back in the day. I mean, I could count probably one handful of apps that I just adore because they're so well designed and crafted and maintained and advanced. One of them is Keyboard Maestro and stuff like where there's just like it's its own little world in these apps. And apps are very flat. They've been flattened by kind of the iPhone model, and I think it's that kind of has spread to the Mac. And who knows what the catalyst developments are not going to exacerbate that. I hope not, but there's a chance that'll happen. So I don't know. I'm very down on the software side, and I'd love to hear your more optimistic view because I might be missing some stuff. I'm very down on it. And I've been depressed about this quality of software, not just from Apple, but just in general on PCs as of late.
Well, yeah, it seems like all of the interest and excitement is in the mobile space. And that includes within Apple, it's over at Google. It's certainly within the Apple developer community. Maybe at Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft pretty much got its butt handed to it in the mobile space.
Yeah.
I don't even know what they're focusing on at this point. Well, actually, one of the things they're focusing on is education.
But even in the mobile space, I don't feel that excitement about the apps. Outside of a few that come pre-bundled with it, I there's probably less than a handful that I could say, man, I love that app, even on my phone or on my iPad. There's very few well-crafted gem-like apps. Now, maybe it's an unfair standard, but I always think of the awe of Lisa Office when I first saw it in all of those seven apps, the way they were created, Mac Paint, Mac Draw, when they came out, they were just such wonderful gems. HyperCard, when they came out, there was depth to them. There was care about it. You could feel it. And I don't know, like I said, they're just very, even on the mobile space, I don't know that I have that feeling. And even in the standard set of apps, things go unupdated so much. What would it take for Apple to destroy the other instant message companies for business? Like, none of them offer real privacy and security. Mm. But they just need to update iMessages just so little to, be like a Slack competitor or something like that, you would think. And they just show no interest. There's like no imagination. It's like, well, wow, we could do this, right? Why wouldn't we want to do this? People seem to really want that, and we could offer a privacy bent to it that no one else can. It's just, outside of another set of emojis that are going to be added to iMessage, I'm not really hopeful that there's going to be a major update.
I think Apple sees iMessage differently. More specifically, I mean, like this, the emphasis on Memoji and emojis and such is because I think Apple sees iMessage's potential within the world of personal communication and even bordering on social media. And that is a much different beast than corporate communications with apps such as Slack. And does Microsoft have a Slack competitor yet?
Yeah, there are several kind of in that corporate messaging market. And as far as I know, like I said, they're all cloud-based. They're not privacy secure. I mean, there's a market for that. And
There is. And I agree with you that Apple could do that if they want to.
I'm sorry. The point is, you may have a fair point. Maybe they don't want it to go there. The point is that there's so many of their apps that they remain stagnant for years, and they show no spark of imagination, no spark of desire to keep doing that you would see from an individual developer. If you just look at the person that's been doing Pathfinder, which is a Finder replacement, It's I think a one man shop, and there's clear enthusiasm in iterating that product and really adding value to it and coming out with a new set of features. And the same thing with Keyboard Maestro and some of these other where there's a person that actually has a spark of love for the thing. And to me, it's a bad operational structure. Not just for Aperture, but if Apple has to beg its own people, would someone please work on this project? Would someone please take care of notes? How about this? How many years do we have to wait till Contacts allows us to lock a contact like we can a note? Because people put lots of very important information in those contacts, and if they were to get out unsecured, that would be a bad thing. How many years is it going to take for the spark of genius that's required to add that to the product?
Listen, I agree with you. Can this not be traced back to Steve's mania for operating as a startup? So to what I mean by that is that it was often the same core group of programmers that were working on a bunch of different products rather than having people take ownership and possession of a product. Right. So are we not seeing the vestiges of that policy, coming home to haunt us?
So one, how did Steve manage to iterate more products more frequently and the software with less resources?
People ragged.
And the point
don't get me wrong. We're on the same side on that particular argument. What I'm asking ragged. is if that policy, the policy that produced that stuff, hasn't taken its course and toll.
Well, I agree that especially the early days that he ran people ragged beyond comprehension. There's no way he ran people ragged from 1996 when he came back to 2011. He built some infrastructure that let this stuff happen. He built it out and scaled it to what it was in 2011. And I don't think that Apple has continued to scale in the same way. It's just been bad, and the proof has been in the lack of product updates, which hopefully are improving. Maybe that's part of the infrastructure. And I think you said this during the Daily podcast, or someone did, where I think it might have been Kelly who said or John said the iMac Pro is next up, right? Like hopefully they're now catching up, and now we'll see regular things, and then software is the next thing, right? Once they catch up on the hardware, they'll start actually finding someone that cares about it. But I just don't see enthusiasm and care in the software side. I wish I felt differently about it.
I largely agree with you on that. I am curious as to where it comes from, and I'm curious about how one could actually solve it.
All right. One thing we can agree on, this has nothing to do with, if the story that I put forward about the Aperture Group is true, it has nothing to do with being run ragged. It has everything to do with having employees that are insane to say, I don't feel like working on that, and management being more insane to accept that and then say, we're done with this product. That is not a good management operation, if that is anywhere near true. It's horrendous. Again, that would never have happened with Steve Jobs. He would have fired everyone involved and anyone near involved just to set an example like, no, this is not going to happen. I'm not sure they have a sense of priority and care on it. And part of it is I worry that the kind of burnout of Johnny hasn't somewhat become institutionalized, where there is no fire in the belly to do that. I mean, I remember when I was in the programming technical world, if you let me get near any one of Apple's products and says, this is you, you get to work on this, I would have lost my mind at the opportunity to do that.
But going back to the idea of running like a startup, running lean all the time, I think it becomes harder to maintain that fire in the belly, the passion, when your company is this, you know, multi-hundred-billion-dollar behemoth.
He somehow did it from 96 to 2011,
Apple wasn't
and I can't
imagine multi-hundred-billion-dollar.
No, but it was in the
Apple
tens
was
of billions.
Still the underdog for most of Steve until maybe the last couple of years of Steve's life. Apple was the underdog, and in particular, and this kind of comes back to that whole thing that we've talked about, you and I, John, and I've talked about it a million times. To talk about on TDO, I've talked about on ACM, that whole thing about having a product person running the company versus, you know, as Steve used to rant, a bean counter or a marketing guy.
Right, or an operations person.
Well, he didn't ever say an operations person, and he chose an operations person. He talked about bean counters, and he talked about accountants, basically, and marketing people. And then he chose a non-product product person to put in charge of his company. Maybe it takes that product person to maintain that underdog focus that, oh my God, our product has to be better than everybody else's. I don't think that is a motivating thing for Tim Cook.
Yeah, I think if you don't have a lust for the stuff, it trickles down through the rest of the company. And Tim Cook, I don't find that there's nothing he's ever done to communicate to me that he has a lust for the thing, right? Like that Johnny did,
you know what he does have a lust for? He has a lust
thing. I don't mean to denigrate him for him, but he doesn't have that it thing.
He has a lust for privacy. Right.
Yeah.
This is the piece that that I'm working on. I haven't written it yet. Dave Hamilton bugged me to write it, talking about the fact that Tim Cook has skated to the puck when it comes to privacy, and that's one of the areas where Apple is absolutely
except for the lack of VPN.
Fair enough, but from all the other standpoints, he does. He also, I think, has a lust for making people's lives better. I think a lot of what we've seen with Apple Watch, and I think a lot of what we know Apple to be working on in terms of the healthcare industry, actually stems from a lust to improve people's lives in those areas.
That part is so vague as to be non-powerfully motivating in any way. It's kind of like saying, I have a lust for good things happening to humanity. That's wonderful, but you're really not going to, you know, turn my engine over to get out early in the morning and work and be enthusiastic about something. It's just too banal a message.
We don't know how enthusiastically people are working on these things that we don't know about yet.
I can only go by the product and the frequency of the product. And it seems like nobody likes software at Apple outside of the operating system stuff that they're doing.
Yeah. I can't really argue against that.
Yeah, ain't that sad?
It really is. All right, John, here's the deal. I want to thank Molecule for sponsoring the show. And again, you can get $75 off your first order if you go to molecule.com. That's molecule.com. Molecule with a K. And at checkout, enter ACM. You're going to get $75 off your first order. I love my molecules a lot. I recommend them. I like them. And you should definitely, absolutely check them out. John, I want to thank you for taking time out of your very busy day to join us and talk about this stuff. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. We had a couple of interruptions. I don't even know how long this show is going to end up being, but I was thinking it would be short. Now I think it's going to be long.
Well, that's not a surprise to anyone that knows us, but I will also add that, as always, I super enjoy our conversations. They're far more interesting than everything else I read. So kudos and thank you, man.
Yeah, likewise. That's right back at you. All right, so let me play this. And then then let me say, and that's all for this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth here is provided by CashFly, the bassist by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that is all for this week.